And our text is taken from Daniel chapter 3 verses 1 to 18. But the key verses for today are verses 17 to 18. Verses 17 to 18. Let us read it aloud together. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O King. But if not, be it known unto thee, O King, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. In Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 to 18, Nebuchadnezzar's megalomania caused him to summon all the civil, legal, and military officers of the whole realm, extending to every outlying province, to a dedication service of his statue. The difficulty suddenly arises when it is observed that three high-ranking officers, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, refuse to bow to Nebuchadnezzar's golden image. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were given a second chance. If they would bow this time to the image, they would be spared. If not, they would be sentenced to death by the burning furnace. Let us look at what exactly happened. Roman numeral 1, the dedication of the image. The dedication of the image. And letter A, the construction of the image. The construction of the image. First one reads, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 70 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar ordered the image made. Perhaps he patterned its shape after the image he had seen in the dream in Daniel chapter 2. Both images were great in size, and both were brilliant in appearance. Cross-reference with Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. The image was probably gold-plated wood, since the weight of such a large image of solid gold would be very difficult to erect. Such an image would be brilliant, and set up in the plain of Dura would be visible from a long distance. In the dream, the king had seen a multiple metal image with a head of gold that represented Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 2, verse 37. The other metals of the dream image represented kingdoms that were to follow Babylon. This was a prophecy that Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom would eventually end, falling to another kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar's construction of the image was not only an act of idolatry, but may also have demonstrated resistance against the interpretation which Daniel had given to his dream. Even though the king had recognized Daniel's God as a revealer of secrets, Daniel chapter 2 verse 47, he apparently decided to resist the power of God and made an entire image, not just the head, of gold. He planned to establish an everlasting kingdom that would not fall to another people. Nebuchadnezzar erected this image to promote himself. Criticizing him for such a pompous act is easy, but we have all promoted ourselves to some degree, haven't we? Why is promoting ourselves so easy to do? We are all naturally selfish and interested in self-promotion because we are all sinners. This brings us to another question. Why are many believers hesitant to promote Christ and stand up for Him when opportunities arise? They are afraid of being rejected by those who see them stand for Christ. They want to protect their own reputation. They don't want to suffer the consequences of standing for Christ. Are you like that? Are you like that? The date of this event is not given. It may have occurred after Babylon's final wave of attack on Judah in 586 BC and might have been intended to show the superiority of Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar to all other nations and gods. One way of ensuring a lasting kingdom would be to include in his kingdom leaders from all the nations which he had conquered. He must secure the loyalty of these men and cause them to submit to him. By forcing them to worship his image publicly, he would also force their allegiance. The image was 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Either it was intentionally misproportioned, or the image was placed on a pedestal. In either case, it was impressive. Letter B, the convocation of the leaders. The convocation of the leaders. A certain family kept getting unwanted visits from the Jehovah's Witnesses. It was an annoying inconvenience. The husband or wife would tell their unwelcome callers that they were not interested in the Jehovah's Witnesses. They would then explain to their young children, their two young children, that Jehovah's Witnesses did not believe all the things that true Christians believed. While on vacation to another city, this family drove by a Jehovah's Witness assembly hall. One of the young children carefully read the sign in front of the building and announced his discovery. "I found out where they make those Jehovah's Witnesses." A Jehovah's Witness assembly hall is not a place where Jehovah's Witnesses are made. A Jehovah's Witness assembly hall is a place where Jehovah's Witnesses are called together, a convocation. Similarly, we have a convocation here. Not a convocation of Jehovah's Witnesses, but a convocation of leaders. Verses 2 to 3 reads, "Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Nebuchadnezzar ordered that all his government officials be present for the dedication of his image. Verse 2. "The list of officers might have been in a declining order, the first named being the highest officers." We do not know where Daniel was at this time, but we can safely say that Daniel did not worship the image. His many responsibilities as ruler over the province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon, Daniel 2:48, to say nothing of his work as a prophet of God, had most likely removed him from this situation in God's providence. In obedience to the king's command, all the officials of the kingdom who were present came before the image. Verse 3. Perhaps they did not know the actual reason for their gathering, but the sight of both the image and the burning furnace would have given them some clues. Let us see the command of the king. The command of the king. A third grade Sunday school teacher was giving a Bible lesson on the commandment, "Honor thy father and mother." "Now, does anyone know a command for brothers and sisters?" the teacher asked. One particularly perceptive child raised her hand and confidently responded, "Thou shalt not kill." Just as a child issued a command concerning siblings, Here, when the royal officials were all present, a herald issued the king's command. Verses 4 to 6 reads, "Then an herald cried aloud, 'To you is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshippeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace.'" The text mentions a number of instruments from foreign cultures that Nebuchadnezzar evidently enjoyed. The order, however, involved a direct violation of the first two of the Ten Commandments, as it certainly included the element of reverence for pagan gods. The king would swiftly, the same hour, enact the penalty for refusing to bow, and the penalty was severe. Verse 6. The alternatives were clear: bow or burn. The fact that the furnace was already burning indicates that Nebuchadnezzar realized there would be some who would not want to bow before his image. But he reasoned that the penalty for the disobedience was so severe, none would dare resist him. Letter B, the compliance of the subjects. The compliance of the subjects. Verse 7 reads, "Therefore at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up." The ceremony began when the orchestra started to play. As might be expected, all the people worshipped the image. Verse 7. The "all" here is obviously a generalization, since the three Hebrew men did not bow. But compared to the great mass of those who did, the three who stood were as nothing. Consider the pressure on the Hebrews to compromise their faith. Number one, they did not have Daniel with them to lead and influence them. Number two, they would have wanted to avoid this painful and deadly punishment. Human nature gives all men the desire for self-preservation. Consider the pressure on the Hebrews to compromise their faith. Number three, they had already been placed in responsible positions over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Daniel 2:49, and they might have reasoned that if they compromise a bit here, they would live and be able to use their position and influence for the good of God's people later. Number four, peer pressure is an awesome force. Number five, they might have reasoned that it was excusable to bow as long as they meant nothing by it. In their hearts, they knew the image was not a god. Their minds would still be pure. And number six, finally, they might have attempted a cover-up for their actions. When the music sounded, they might have bent over to tie a shoe, or look for a drop coin, or examine the flowers. They would not be worshipping the image. If anyone thought they were, then that would be the other person's problem. But then we have Roman numeral 2, the descent of the Hebrews. The descent of the Hebrews. Although there were extreme pressures to bow before the image, the three Hebrew youths did not succumb to the pressures. They stood when all others bowed. Because of their high position in the governmental structure, they probably were near the front of the crowd of worshippers where everyone could see them easily. That's A, the denouncement by the accusers. the denouncement by the accusers. Verses 8 to 12 reads, "Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshippeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Those who bowed should presumably have had their faces to the ground and not been looking around. Yet certain Chaldeans saw that the three Jews did not bow. Verse 8, immediately they informed the king, "The anti-Semitism of these Gentiles is evident. The Chaldeans repeated in detail the command of the king. This was to set him up so that they could force his hand in destroying the Jews." Verses 9 to 11. Their accusation was biased. "Certain Jews did not bow." Verse 12. The Chaldeans were probably jealous that the king had given the Jews positions they felt should have gone to those of their own country. The accusation identified Nebuchadnezzar's role in their advancement, "whom thou hast set over the affairs." They were bold in suggesting that the king had made an improper placement. The accusation was also bitter, for the Jews were accused of being insubordinate. "These men have not regarded thee." Of being irreligious, "they serve not thy gods." And of being irreverent, "nor worship the golden image." Obviously, these Chaldeans have forgotten Daniel's kindness in Daniel chapter 2, verse 24. They were overtaken with resentment against the rapid advancement of Daniel and his friends in Daniel chapter 2, verse 49. Letter B, the dealings of the king. The dealings of the king. Verses 13 to 15 reads, "Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Although the king was angry, we must commend Nebuchadnezzar for giving the men an opportunity to explain or alter their actions. Verses 14 to 15. He would rather not destroy them. He preferred that they change their actions and willingly submit to his demands. The king would emerge the stronger if they voluntarily submitted. Nebuchadnezzar believed his gods were more powerful than those of the people he had conquered. In defeating the Jews, he believed he had defeated their God. Therefore, he challenged in verse 15, "Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" He did not realize that the God who gave the Jews into his hand, Daniel 1:2, could also deliver them from his hands. The calm confidence of the three Jews must have infuriated him, for they were not intimidated by him. letter C, the determination of the Hebrews. The determination of the Hebrews. Verses 16 to 18 reads, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. The pressure was again on the three Hebrews, perhaps even more strongly than before. Every eye was upon them. They were the center of attention. Would they falter as they are tested for a second time? Would you falter if you were tested for a second time? What would be some of the things you might be tempted to do or say if you were placed in a situation such as these men found themselves in here? The response of the three men was essentially an acknowledgement of guilt as far as the king's command was concerned. They fully understood the order and the consequence of disobeying it. These men knew that their God could deliver them if he chose to do so. And they stated it in no uncertain terms. Verse 17. The three friends realized that God's will for their lives might be different from their desires when they said, but if not. Verse 18. God might not deliver them. Yet they were content to commit themselves to his will. Their convictions ran deep. They did not attempt to make a deal with God. Their convictions were not conditioned upon God's favorable disposal of their case. The dedication of the image and the descent of the Hebrews. What rationale do believers today use to excuse their disobedience to God's word? They will just confess their sin later. They obey God most of the time. They don't really have a choice. No one else will know. But none of the pressures believers face today really rise to the level of the pressure on the Hebrews. They face sudden death. What opportunities those believers would miss to stand for the Lord? What could someone do to prepare for opportunities to stand for the Lord? Pray for opportunities ahead of time. Develop a definite set of convictions based on God's word. And deal with any tendency to compromise in areas that seem small or unimportant. What are some examples of a believer today standing for the Lord? A woman refuses to divorce her husband even though he refuses to enter counseling. A worker refuses to lie in order to retain customers. An employee tells his boss that he won't lie to him in order to retain his business. God expects us to stand firm for him even when it means standing alone. In closing, let us all rise to sing, Dare to be a Daniel. Let's sing it again, focusing on the chorus. Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, dare to make it known.